Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began a conversation with Rabbi David Krishev. He is the rabbi of Ahavas Israel, the conservative synagogue here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And over the past year or so, he's been on a journey. Someone reached out to him, whom David would never think to have ever made that reach. And we discussed it in detail last week, but the story is far from over. So we welcome once again to the microphones of Common Threads, Rabbi David Krishev. Hello, David.
Thank you, Fred. Hello.
Hi. I suspect that the way we left things last week, we probably have close to 100% of the people who had their ear to the radio. They're back because, well, this is such a fascinating story. But we may have a few new people. So what I'd like to do, if we can, is just scrunch as much as you can a summary of what happened to you in the last year or so, and then we can pick up from that point.
Sure. So I get this letter arguing that Jews are spiritually disgusting, signed by Tim Vance, lives in Texas. I responded to the letter telling him, thank you for the $50 you enclosed with the essay. We'll use it for good work in the synagogue. And explained why the essay didn't touch or convince me as a Jew. Tim happened to be coming to Michigan sometime shortly after that. And we arranged to have breakfast. I think that's where we ended last week.
It is, as a matter of fact. So you're at the table with Larry, and he's buying, correct?
He bought me breakfast.
All right. then how was that experience for you?
It's very uncomfortable. I'm sitting across the table from somebody who is coming from Texas. Yeah. I don't know him from Adam, except for this essay that he sent me, which is not complimentary towards Jews. There were no overt threats in the essay, but the family and friends who knew that I had received this essay and I was meeting with him were not necessarily very happy with it. I think some of them thought he might have a gun and pull out the gun and shoot me during breakfast. I wasn't worried about that. I'm not quite sure why I wasn't worried, other than I didn't see anything in the essay that would lead me to think that he was dangerous, but I knew nothing else about him. And that's what I wanted to find out at that breakfast, right? What motivated him to write this essay and send it out? Why did he include Lutherans and Reformed Christians along with Catholics, Muslims, and Jews in a list of people who he condemned in this essay? What kind of a Christian is he? So we spent about an hour talking about those kinds of questions, and he had a list of questions for me. Never met a Jew, never spent time talking about Judaism with anybody who knows anything about it, never was in a synagogue. And he was curious to find out who I was because I was the only person who responded to the essay, except for those who responded by calling the police or the FBI. And he had gotten calls from the FBI starting to investigate him because of this essay. His lawyer said, don't respond. And none of those calls from the FBI went anywhere. But I imagine that they were a little unsettling. And he was honestly confused. We didn't understand why the essay prompted rabbis to call the FBI.
Really?
So this is what we talked about during breakfast that morning.
And I'm not sure if you mentioned it so far in these last couple of minutes, that he sent the copies of this essay along with a $50 bill to 50 different rabbis chosen at random.
We don't know the organizing principle behind the choice. It was made by his son. 50 rabbis in North America.
Wow. And did you find out what kind of Christian he was?
Right. So Tim is a very careful follower of Martin Luther. He owns every volume that Martin Luther ever wrote, and his Christianity is exactly to the letter as closely as he can be. He is a Christian exactly as Martin Luther says you should be a Christian.
But you said that a number in the litany of people who are going to hell, Lutherans are in there as well. How could that be?
Okay. So there are. So Fred, you're speaking to a Jew. So what I know about Lutherans, normal Lutherans, I could fit into this coffee cup in front of me, and have room for the coffee. But I understand that there are three major or somewhat major denominations of Lutheran in North America or beyond. There's the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. They're the major Lutheran organization. And then there's the two synods who didn't want to join in to the ELCA, the Missouri Synod and the Wisconsin Synod. Missouri Synod is more traditional than ELCA, and the Wisconsin Synod is far to the right of the Missouri Synod.
Right. I remember I've spoken to Lutherans before who are members of the evangelical branch, and they're always quick to say, but we're not that evangelical. The other ones are more evangelical. They should have that word in their name.
Right. So if you were to put Tim on this spectrum, Tim would be somewhat far, far, far to the right of the Wisconsin Synod in terms of his theology and religious practice. So he believes that the ELCA sold out Martin Luther. They're so far away from Martin Luther's writings that they have no right to call themselves Lutheran. More or less, he believes the same thing about the Missouri Synod and the Wisconsin Synod, though they're a little bit closer to Martin Luther. He has a church building on his property where he lives, where he, his five children, and his 13 grandchildren worship.
Yeah, that sounds really Fred Phelps-ish.
Yeah, okay. He is not a Fred Phelps in the level of hate that he brings into the world, but he is a Fred Phelps in terms of the narrowness of his Christian beliefs. So he was explaining this to me at breakfast, that he was explaining his approach to Martin Luther. Now, Martin Luther raises all kinds of red flags to a Jew. Right? As I'm sitting and listening to him talk about his love for Martin Luther, I'm feeling, as I was from the beginning of the conversation, uncomfortable. And at the end of our breakfast, we can talk a little bit more about what happened at breakfast. But at the end of the breakfast, I invited him to go to back to the synagogue with me, that little tour of the synagogue. And I had Martin Luther in mind when I invited him on this tour. But basically, the rest of the breakfast was me telling him some something about what I believe about the Bible, what Jews believe about the Bible, him defending the lines, Jews are spiritually disgusting, telling me what was in his mind when he wrote that, a little bit about what he believes as a Christian. I don't think it's worth getting into details. Not that I remember all of them.
Sure. Maybe you can just tell me the concept of Jews being the killers of Christ. Did that enter into his anti-Semitism, or is it something wholly different? To the best
that
of
never
knowledge?
Came up.
Okay.
Yeah. He didn't mention that. It's that Jews rejected Jesus as Messiah that makes them spiritually disgusting. It's like a child who walks away from his father. After everything I've done for you for 18 years, you're going to walk away from this house and never speak to me again? Right? That's disgusting. So that's what Jews did to Jesus.
I see.
And that's why he's called them spiritually disgusting.
So you take him to the synagogue. Tell us that part of it.
So the synagogue has a chapel, a smaller chapel, in which we have plaques honoring the memory of family members of people in the synagogue who have passed away. I showed him the general tour of the synagogue. I showed him what the different things are, but I was more interested in those five plaques belonging to one particular member. David Mandel has plaques for his mother and his siblings, and they all died on the same day. So I pointed to those plaques and said, those five people walked into Auschwitz on that day that you see on the plaque. They died on that day. Walked to the front of the building, looked at the memorial to the Holocaust in the main foyer of the synagogue. And I said, Tim, the Holocaust in significant ways shapes the way Jews experience the world. Right? You walk into the synagogue, one of the first things you see is this memorial to the Holocaust, to the memory of those who were murdered in the Holocaust. And Tim, you have to know that the Nuremberg laws, the first formal actions taken against Jews, the first formal legal action, there was another action called Kristallnacht, which was an organized riot against Jews, which actually I believe took place on Martin Luther's birthday. But the formal legal action against Jews, almost word for word, was taken against an essay that Martin Luther wrote against Jews. Martin Luther called for synagogues to be burned, right? Kristallnacht. Right? Martin Luther called for Jews to be restricted in where they live, in what they wear, badges, marriage to non-Jews. So all those things, Nuremberg laws, Martin Luther's writings, line them up. So I said, Tim, when you write an essay that lauds Martin Luther and send it to Jews, Jews are not going to react well, right? Because you are praising as a hero the person who was inspiration to Hitler in the Holocaust. Right? It didn't entirely sink in, but the whole conversation and the experience of being in the synagogue, when Tim left that morning, all he said to me is, I promise I will never rebuke the Jews as I did in that essay again.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mentioned Larry Trapp last week, the neo-Nazi turned
yes.
Jew. it was inspiration for reaching out to somebody like Tim. By the way, I do want to make it clear that Tim is not a neo-Nazi. He's not, you know, a KKK person. Far from it. Larry was just my inspiration for reaching out to somebody I had no connection to or nothing in common with. So I thought, he walks out the synagogue, and I'm thinking, success, right? That's what I wanted to do. And I was happy.
And let me just break in briefly to remind people that you are listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Rabbi David Krishoff. And we're talking about a very powerful experience that he has undergone in the last year and a half. Okay, so he's walking out of the synagogue. He's told you that he will no longer use the language that he used in the letter to you and the 49 other rabbis who got these letters and $50 from him. But I know that there's a next chapter to this, so take us there.
As I never expected to have any more contact with him after that, but he would periodically email me or text me a question. So we had some ongoing conversation. He has a website, and I noticed shortly after that this essay disappeared from his website. So he noticed he was keeping his word. I got a phone call from him maybe 2 months after that, where he said in this phone call, I would like you to take me to Israel. I pay all expenses. I want to see Israel through your eyes. So it's kind of a stunning phone call. And all I could say is, you know, let me think about it, which was mostly my way of, it's like a parent saying, we'll see,
yeah.
Right? The answer is no, but I want to tell you no right away, so I'm going to pretend to think about it, right? But he followed up with some email, and he was interested in learning more about Judaism. I gave him some names of books to read, and he started reading them. And it didn't, at the time, he didn't have many questions that he followed up with me. I mean, I have limited time in my life to deal with him. So if I'd had a deluge of questions, I would have probably cut off the relationship completely. So I went to some family members and other friends. So he asked me if I would take him to Israel. What do you think about this? Yeah, I didn't get a lot of positive responses. But I found myself coming back to it and thinking about it seriously, thinking, you know, first of all, he's paying.
That's a big thing.
It's a big thing.
By the way, do we know how well-heeled he is? What does he do?
At the time, I didn't know. I found out since he owned rental properties. He mm-hmm. was also a licensed therapist, doing Christian therapy for the most part. He and his wife were briefly teachers.
Okay.
But I think most of his money would be from rental properties.
Okay.
Right. So I'm thinking, you know, he wants to see Israel through my eyes. So I don't know what that means. I don't know that he understands how much a trip like this would cost. I sent a note to my conservative rabbis group looking for a travel agent and a tour guide, looking for somebody who can give me an approximate cost of such a trip. So after going through the responses that boiled down to, you are insane for even thinking about this, there were a few responses that said, this is really interesting. If you go to Israel, would you make sure that you give me a chance to meet him? Right? There's a few positive responses. I found somebody who gave me a quote. Right? So I called Tim back. I said, I'm still thinking about it. So here are a few things you have to know. It may be not including the cost of the plane tickets. It may be around $15,000 because I am not a tour guide. And if you want to go on a good tour of Israel, we have to hire a tour guide. I'm not going to drive in Israel. We have to hire a driver. You know, hotels at the times when it's pleasant to go, kind of expensive.
Which is when?
I was originally hoping to go in the summer. Uh-huh. To give away part of the end of the story, we went in the fall.
Okay.
Because
it's still pleasant, though.
Summer didn't work for me, but fall is still pleasant.
Okay.
You know, 75 and sunny when it snowed here in Grand Rapids.
Sure.
So I told them all of these things, and I said, what do you mean you want to see Israel through my eyes? You want to see Christian sites? Because I'm not interested in going to Christian sites, but I've been in touch with a great tour guide who can give you a terrific tour of all of the Christian sites in and around Jerusalem. And he said, no, I'm not interested in seeing anything Christian. And what I mean by seeing Israel through your eyes is I want you to plan a trip and see whatever you want to see, and I just want to tag along. And he was very clear that that's what he wanted to do. So I did go on the trip. For a while, I had another friend in the synagogue coming with us who was going to pay his own way, and I jokingly referred to him as my bodyguard, because then I wouldn't be alone with Tim ever. Turned out in the end he couldn't go, so I was traveling just with Tim for most of the trip, and I spent part of the next year planning this trip, working it out with the tour guide. The tour guides did not understand what I wanted. They'd never been asked by an evangelical Christian to go on a trip that was aimed at a rabbi who had been in Israel 8 times already. To see whatever the rabbi wanted to see. As a tour guide, who are you speaking to? You're speaking to the rabbi, in which case you're talking with a certain vocabulary and with a certain expectation of knowing what you're seeing, or are you talking to the Christian, which is you use a different vocabulary, and you assume that he knows nothing. So he's the one paying, but the Christian says over and over again, no, this trip is for the rabbi. I'm just seeing through his eyes. So they didn't understand, and I didn't entirely either. But we put together this, what I will call my dream trip to Israel for a week. The things I hadn't seen in 40 years or 45 years. The things I've always wanted to see but never had a chance. And a few weeks ago, a month ago, Tim and I got on an airplane in Newark, headed towards Warsaw and then Tel Aviv to spend a week in Israel together.
That is really astounding. David, we have just a few minutes left. We've got like less than 5, maybe 3 minutes. Can you give us the takeaway when you got back or on the return from Israel? Would you say that Larry was transformed above and beyond the way he was transformed when he toured the synagogue?
I'm not sure yet. All I can say is that Tim will not be converting to Judaism. It's not that kind of story. He said he had one very powerful experience, but he didn't describe it. He said he would send me something. He was going to write something about it, and he would send it to me. So I haven't seen that yet. I took him to a Sabbath service on a Friday night and to a Sabbath dinner at the home of our tour guide and his wife. And they had several other guests who were very interesting people and interested in Tim's story, in our story. We told the story during dinner. Tim actually had to leave the room at a certain point because he was getting very emotional. But there was something about being with us on the Sabbath that really touched him. It transformed him, I'm not sure, but something happened to him that night, and I'm not sure what yet.
And I believe I accidentally called him Larry a couple of minutes ago. I'm sorry. His name is Tim. Larry was the person we were speaking about last week, a whole different story. Well, it sounds like the story isn't exactly over yet, but I wasn't going to wait. I've been waiting for, I believe, a year. I think it was a year ago that I said, Rabbi, I have to get you on Common Threads for this.
I think so.
So I thank you so much for sharing it. I'm absolutely thrilled that you had the heart to go on this journey, which several other rabbis, 49 other rabbis, did not go on this journey. But you did, and regardless of what happens to Tim in his life, he's probably not going to be sending out nasty letters. He's probably retired from anti-Semitism, and I hope he has a good life ahead of him.
I hope so, too. I would be happy to come back again after I see his essay, and after I have a little more time to process my own experience and tell you the next chapter.
We will think about that. Very, and not in a parental way. You're listening to WGVU's Common Threads. I'm Fred Stella. My guest today has been Rabbi David Krishoff. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.